Hi friends, it's Jason Rushton here, welcoming you to this interview with Matthew Fradd. Matthew Fradd is a young Australian man who is battling the culture of pornography head on and with all his guns blazing. He's the founder of a website called thepornefect.com, which is starting to make waves around the world as it reaches out to individuals, couples and families battling with the scourge of pornography addiction. Matt has courageously shared his personal testimony of finding freedom through Christ after a profound conversion at World Youth Day 2000 in Rome, and you can hear more about that via the links we've provided on our webpage. He now lives in Canada with his wife and two beautiful children. He's been on EWTN, the BBC, the Irish Morning Show and Catholic Answers Live, and as of yesterday, Cradio. I spoke to him while he was in Australia to visit family back in Adelaide. Here's our conversation. Firstly, I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to speak to us, and I know you've had to organise a babysitter to speak to us now, so we're really grateful for your time, and we're really grateful for your apostolate, especially in this time when so many young men and married couples are struggling with the effects of pornography. You're a real beacon of hope, so thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. I should point out that it's actually my mother that's babysitting my son, so she's loving it too.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, my first question was actually, I don't know if you've seen already the movie 127 Hours?
I haven't. No, I haven't, but I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, I saw it last week. Of course, it's about this man, Aaron Ralston, who I think it was 2003, was in the canyons of Utah and got trapped under a rock.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's a scene in the movie, I guess he's been under the rock for about 5 days, and he pulls out his video camera and he realizes that these girls who he'd been swimming with before he got trapped, they were kind of just wearing their swimming costume and they'd kind of posed a bit for the camera. And anyway, he actually has this kind of little dilemma as he's trapped here and completely dehydrated and starving and everything, and he's tempted actually to masturbate while watching this video, and he has this real kind of spiritual battle going on inside him, and in the end he decides not to. But it just really struck me that you know, there was a scene like that in this really big new movie. And I was just wondering, what was your reaction to that? And does that kind of sum up how many young men these days, even if they're on the point of death and trapped under a rock, that temptation from pornography can be so strong that even in a situation like that, they might be tempted to
do that? I think that's a really good question. And I haven't seen the movie, but just going from what you have said there, it seems to me that it's not simply even in this situation would they be tempted. I would say it's almost metaphorically because they are in this situation that they're tempted. It seems to me that men and women do not go to pornography because they desire to exploit people, even though that is the outcome of pornography always. It seems to me that they go because they desire to fill themselves with that which they feel that they lack. So a man might feel lonely, and so he goes to pornography to feel some sense of communion, but it always leaves him isolated. He might go because he wants excitement, but he always ends up bored. Bored with some of the most beautiful bodies on the planet, clicking to the next fantasy and to the next fantasy, expecting that when he gets married that the wedding ring will be like a magic ring and give him instantaneous self-control, which never happens. A man or woman might go to pornography because they want peace of mind, much like in the scene you're describing. He was looking for peace and comfort. But instead of peace, after the sexual fall, the man or the woman is left feeling agitated and bored and lonely. So like all sin, it gives us the opposite of that which we were seeking in the first place.
So how do people respond when you, well, through your website, and I guess you do a lot of public speaking as well, how do people respond when maybe they hear hear it put like this for the first time?
Well, I mixed reviews, but I think for the most part, people are happy that someone's addressing the issue. I think one of the lies our society has perhaps believed, and it's time to get over it, is that the only people who are looking at pornography is the, you know, dirty, perverted old men in trench coats. The reality is we do live in an overly sexualized culture, but that doesn't make sex the problem. And I think one of the cures to an overly sexualized culture is to get our culture to think about sex more. And what I mean by that is I think a lot of us, a lot of our culture, a lot of our sitcoms that we watch, a lot of our movies and our music, we sing about sex, we dream about sex, we joke about sex, but how often do we sit back and think about it? And so in our apostolate, that's basically what we're trying to get men and women to do. Let's think about sex. What is it? What's its purpose? You read Genesis 1:28, and that's the very first commandment from God to humanity in the Bible. And that very first commandment was to be fruitful and multiply and fill the face of the earth. And as Dr. Peter Kraft has pointed out, I don't think he meant grow oranges and learn your multiplication tables. So bringing it from that perspective, look, sex is a good thing. And Hugh Hefner didn't invent it. Cosmopolitan wasn't their idea. Hollywood wasn't their idea. It was the Lord of Lords. So what is it? What's its purpose? And then when we use a thing according to its purpose, we can find real freedom.
So,
to answer your question, it's been a positive response, I guess mainly because I do bring in my own story into it. So if I'm condemning anyone, it's myself. But when I do speak about how I did struggle with pornography, of course I follow it up with the hope and freedom that can only come from Jesus Christ and the sacraments.
Sure. Well, if people want to see your story, there's such an excellent YouTube video of you on that Irish morning breakfast TV show where you go through that. And maybe we can just skip over that now so we can get into other things. But I mean, I think that I know a lot of young men, and I'd probably have to even include myself in that, who could tell very similar stories about how they grew up in a culture that really affirmed this real sin that was leading them in the complete wrong direction and completely missing the point of their sexuality, and then having to find out, well, through World Youth Day or whatever, just being blessed enough to find out the truth and goodness of it all. So, but I'm really wondering, I guess, being at the forefront of spreading the good news like this, what stories do you hear? What are young men that you meet going through? What are married couples that you meet going through? You know, what emails do you get from people, and what stories do you hear?
Yeah. Well, I want to point something out, Jason, and I think a lot of people seem to say this, and it's not their fault. I just think maybe because they're not on the front lines like me, they're just not aware. And that is this. That though men certainly do have the corner market on pornography, it is a growing epidemic among young women and among women in general. And so I think often, even though it is a minority, because pornography is not addressed, the problem with pornography and how women can overcome it and struggle with it, because that's not usually addressed in Christian circles, it makes the isolation all the greater. So I just want to point that out for the men and the women listening, that this isn't simply a male problem or, you know, a husband in a marriage struggling with pornography. It is often the woman also, and for very different reasons, and we can talk about that if you like later. But I do get many, many, many emails. We do from husbands, from women, from men struggling. And the absolute vast majority, it comes down to this. It comes down to, listen, I don't want to be this kind of man. Do you know? It's not, well, I like this sin a lot and I'd love to keep it up, but apparently the church says I shouldn't, so I guess I should stop. No, it's not that. It's, sure, it makes me feel good for a second, but it always leaves me empty, and I really don't want to be this kind of guy. They're like, you know, I'm in my teenage years right now, but I'm going to be a father one day maybe, and I don't want to be the kind of dad that has a secret stash of porn somewhere like my dad did, they might say to me, you know. I want to be free from this stuff. I want to be free. It seems to me that men know, even if they deny that they know, they seem to know innately that creeping off to their computer late at night is there's nothing intrinsically masculine about that. And so the vast majority of emails I receive, and they're from old people, from teenagers, from husbands and fathers of six and seven children. I've even had emails from a 79-year-old, you know, and women all over the spectrum. It's a longing for help and to be understood, and to a lot of it's just thankfulness that someone's addressing this issue. And I don't mean in any way to insinuate that I'm the only person speaking about this, but that's not true at all. There's a small army out there who are addressing this issue and much better than I am.
Yeah, sure. And so what's the exact purpose of your website? What things can people find on there, and how did you get the idea actually to even start it?
Yeah, the point of my website is to explore the effects of pornography and then offer help. Really simple. The website came to me, it was about 3 a.m, I was laying in bed in Ireland where my wife and I used to live, and I just woke up and I thought, gee, wouldn't it be great to establish a website to help men, you know, with this thing? At the time, I thought it was just men going through this, because this is something I had recently experienced some degree of freedom in my life, and I felt like, gee, no one's really speaking about this. I'd love to do something like this. So I got these really simple ideas. I'm like, you know, I'd love to kind of maybe record my testimony. I'd love to maybe create a pamphlet and get that out and just come up with a website. So I couldn't go back to sleep, and so I brought it to the Lord and prayed about it, and the next day I created like a $50 website. It was the cheapest thing you've ever seen. But I started to get a lot of attention, even from like the BBC in Northern Ireland, who wanted me to do an interview, and I got, you know, emails from men and women who started talking to me about this, and I realized there was a great need for this. A priest gave me $12,000 to establish the site and make it look good. And so we changed it. It was originally called whodoesithurt.com, and we changed it to thepornoeffect.com. And the website, basically, you're going to have, it's always updating. You know, we have monthly articles from men, from women who struggled with pornography, from wives whose husbands who struggle with pornography, and they write to the wives. We have an ex-porn star who writes about the reality of the porn industry. I think we have the largest online audio library for people who want to overcome pornography, and it's all free. I mean, I've had, you know, speakers like Christopher West and Jeff Cavins who've given me talks that they usually sell for free, so that men and women, once they've signed up, can download this stuff right to their iPod. We've got like, I don't know, there's got to be at least 100 hours of fantastic talks, you know, about how to overcome pornography. We have, you know, forums, my goodness, every couple of months, well, every month we have what we call battle cry and victory stories. And so men and women all over the world, they'll write to us and they'll send us a battle cry, which is how they are currently struggling and battling pornography or lust. And then, you know, some of us will look at that and then post it if it's acceptable. And then people can just comment under these articles and offer them prayers and help and advice. And then we also have victory stories for men and women who have experienced some degree of victory in their life. Because, as you know, Jason, the Lord doesn't simply look upon our failures. He looks upon our victories. And so for some people, that's like, you know, look, I haven't masturbated in a week. And we, you know, praise God. The Lord rejoices, and so should we. And so we post that up. And people from all over the world just sort of offer their comments of support and advice.
Well, it's great to hear just how it's grown and grown. I mean, if you keep it up, you might actually outdo pornography as the, what is it, number two? Wouldn't that be?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I'd be happy if that was what the Lord wanted, yeah.
Sure. Well, I've just got so many questions here. You just mentioned media before, and I'm just wondering, how does that tend to go? I mean, speaking to the BBC and stuff, I mean, do you find pornography still a bit of a taboo subject? And how do journalists go when you speak openly and you know, really courageously as well about your story and pornography?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jason. I mean, just recently we flew out an ex-porn star to Dublin. We hired out the jazz club in Dublin. Like, that's a pretty big deal, hey? And we called different reporters, and I'm like, hey, I'm getting an ex-porn star to come. We're going to interview her live. And a few people hang up on me because they didn't think I was serious. I had the manager of the jazz club give us a discount because we were bringing a porn star to Ireland. He didn't realize that we were against it. So there's a lot of mixed reviews. But what I find most of the time is people are journalists aren't usually expecting a hopeful message. I think, especially when I did that interview on the Irish Morning Show, that was a classic. I mean, that was like sunrises in Australia. You know, it's a big deal. And they interviewed my wife and I. I think they were looking for a sob story. You know, this is how it affected, and oh, it's dark and gloomy. And my wife and I were just like, man, the Lord is good. and he can free you from this. A man and a woman can be permanently resolved against this stuff. Now, that doesn't mean that we'll walk around, it doesn't, perfected completely from these sins. I mean, we all have concupiscence, the tendency to sin, the weakness of the will, the darkened intellect, and none of us are going to experience perfect purity in this life. But our message is, look, the Lord is good, and through His grace, through His sacraments, and through fellowship, it is possible to live a porn-free life. And you know what? It's much more interesting.
And isn't that just such an amazing message? I mean, so many people wouldn't even believe that was true, that that you could actually overcome this addiction.
It's sad that, isn't it? I think that's the case. It's like, oh, it's just not possible, and we'll get over it. And I'll definitely grant you that it's difficult, especially, I mean, the more a man is or a woman is immersed in the clutches of pornography, it's difficult to break free. Because of the pathways that are created in the brain, especially when addiction occurs, you have the dopamine cells, which give us that sense of pleasure, begin to atrophy, and we need to kind of up the level of the drug, pornography in this case, simply to feel normal. And so when we're breaking free from pornography or trying to stop, there really is a battle involved. And so a man or a woman really needs to be permanently resolved, and they need to make some serious decisions. I mean, the Lord Jesus Christ said, if your eye causes you to sin, cut it out and throw it away. And so, I don't know if he meant that, of course, the Lord's using hyperbolic language. I mean, if we were to take that seriously, none of us would have eyes to read the Bible. But I suppose a modern-day translation would be, listen, if your computer causes you to sin, beat it in with a hammer. Give it away. It would be better for you to go to heaven than to be in hell with, email. And so we really do need to take some manful steps in the direction. We can't pussyfoot around with sin. We can't just, say a few prayers and hope it'll go away. We need to make some very concrete decisions in our breaking free from it.
And I love that. I mean, that's got to resonate in every young man's heart, like the call to manliness and to step up and really, beat this thing with a hammer. Like,
can we talk about that for a second?
Please,
can we
go
just
for
talk
it.
About this? And I think this is important, because when the church says to a man, we'll use a man in this example, look, get rid of your porn. What we are not saying is be a good little boy and trash your porn. No, what we need to understand is that not looking at pornography is not about not looking at pornography. It's about embracing our call to masculinity. Now, if we as men want to look at one person in all of history to know who to imitate, well, I mean, we could look at William Wallace, and I suppose he would be a courageous figure to follow. But if we want to look at masculinity perfected and personified, that would have to be Jesus Christ. And in Luke 22:19, Jesus Christ said, "This is my body given up for you." And that's how we are to love. This is my body given up for you. Ephesians 5:25, St. Paul says, "Husbands, love your brides as Christ loves the church." And how do they love it? This is my body given up for you. But if you flip that saying on its head, if you turn it around, if you get the opposite from that, what do you get? You get this. This is your body, not given, but taken by me. And so the man, instead of becoming a provider, he becomes a consumer. Instead of protecting a woman, he pimps out a woman. Instead of defending the dignity of a woman, he degrades her. And so the man he doesn't not get harmed in this process. I mean, the man is emasculated. Emasculation means when a man is robbed of the ability to be masculine. And so, as I pointed out in the start, I mean, this is about boys, rise up. Let's rise up. Let's protect our sisters. Let's defend the dignity of women. And let's do whatever we can. In our speech, this isn't just about not looking at porn. In our speech, in the way we treat, in the way we look women, in the conversations we engage in the sitcoms that we expose ourselves to, we have to be men, permanently resolved to be men of courage and men of valor.
So pornography really then represents the complete antithesis of what it means to be a man. And it really precludes men from rising up to the great calling of their lives, to give themselves totally, to a woman out of love, or, unless they have other vocations. But what makes it so bad is that it just eliminates the possibility of reaching these great heights of life.
Yeah. And what the good news is, is that Jesus Christ, where is that in 1 John chapter 3, verse 8, the reason the Son of God appeared in the world was to destroy the works of the evil one. And so the good news we can trust in is that Jesus Christ is going to give us the grace to overcome this. He's going to give us the grace to be men of valor. And please don't hear me saying, you know, if you've looked at porn in the last month, then you're not a man. That's not at all what I'm saying. I always say this at the conferences and the talks that I give, that, you know, my talk and this message, it's not a message about how they can be like me. No, I'm messed up. You know, I'm struggling to be holy myself. This message is about how we can be like him. And so I think there's a very big difference between a man who is, you know, he's making excuses for it, it's fine, he's just completely emasculated. Big difference between that and a man who strives with all of his heart to break free from this stuff. He may occasionally fall, but when he does, he gets back up again. I mean, there is no shame in being hit in battle. There is shame in standing up and leaving your brothers on the battlefield.
Wow, awesome. Matt, the other thing I wanted to ask you was about your contact in the work that you do with porn actresses. And the reason that this particularly fascinates me is because anyone who looks at pornography has probably never met a porn star in their life. So I guess you're in a unique position to have actually had human face-to-face contact with porn actresses. So I'm just wondering, can you tell us a bit about some of the porn actresses you've met, and what's it really like for them?
Well, I think, you know, if the porn industry really did give the true image and the true picture of what took place on the set, people wouldn't buy. People wouldn't look up their videos. The reality is, porn stars, quote unquote, are not your well-rounded nymphomaniacs that just love their job. I mean, every porn star that I've spoken to has said to me, listen, there is not one woman in this industry who has not suffered some form of neglect or abuse as a younger child. I mean, if you want to, perhaps I hear some people argue with me and they're like, well, that's just sort of, you know, B-grade gonzo actors, you know, but I mean, there certainly are those big porn stars. I mean, they're just doing it because they love it. Well, let's take Jenna Jameson. I mean, she's like the queen of porn. You're not going to find someone as big as her. She's a beautiful woman, you know, and she was interviewed on Howard Stern in the States, and he flat out asked her, he's like, Jenna, have you ever been abused or molested? And she says, no, not at all, no. And they continue with the interview. Well, I read her autobiography, and in her autobiography, she says this. She says that Howard asked me the question, and I just didn't know how to respond, so I lied like a rug. She said, I didn't want anyone to know that I had been gang raped, beaten, and left for dead. I did not want anybody to know that I got into the industry because I was a victim. And so you start to realize these women aren't well-rounded nymphomaniacs. These are hurting women, and we perpetuate the abuse by our consumption of it. You know, if there was no consumption, the industry would die, and that's the reality. But let's say, for example, I wrote about this on my blog today. Let's say, okay, the woman never, in a perfect world, let's say she never was abused, she was never neglected, she had a great relationship with her father, she's never been on drugs, she's never been drunk, she quite, you know, she just quite rightly happens to very much enjoy sex, and she finds it liberating. What then? Is it wrong then? Well, we need to step back and say, what's the problem with pornography? You see, the problem with pornography isn't that it's addictive, and it's not that the vast majority of women have been abused. That's not the problem. That's the consequence of porn, or that's the motivating factor of why people go to porn or get out of porn. But the problem with porn isn't that it's addictive, but that it's exploitative. You know, we reduce the beauty and mystery of femininity to a collection of body parts to use, rather than a person to be loved. But let's say, for example, that she's quite happy to be exploited. Well, just because a woman is willing to give us everything she's got, just because a woman doesn't know her dignity, does that give us the right to take from her everything she's willing to give? You think about it, what does our masculinity boil down to at that point? We say things, it's basically saying, well, look, as long as I don't rape her, I'm being a good boy. But again, we're not about being good boys, we're about being holy men. And I love to say this, and that's that the, you know, Christianity is not about the annihilation of our sexual desire. It's a God-given gift. Christianity is about the perfection of our sexual desire for the sake of love. And so you're right. Every woman I have met in the industry has said, or have written to, you know, have said it's atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious. And they all say, when I was in the industry, I talked constantly about how much I loved it. And the reason I talked about how much I loved it is so people would buy my DVDs and I would get more money. I mean, it's acting. I've got a good friend of mine. I'm interviewing him next month in a punk bar. He is a former Playboy producer. His name's Donnie Pooling. He tells me about what goes on between takes, you know, about the woman curled up in a fetal position, sucking her thumb because of the abuse that she just took on set, about almost every woman coming back to him at some point with tears in her eyes, begging to get the footage back because she can't believe she made that mistake. She was tied up for cash or whatnot. But now it's out there, now it's on the internet, and it can never come back.
And that just must be the most humiliating and excruciating feeling to know that there's videos and pictures of you floating around in cyberspace being so, you know, humiliated and exploited. That would just, that'd just be unbearable. Well, Matt, my other, I guess, question is, you know, if people are listening to this and they are currently, and this must be one of your most frequently asked questions, if people are listening to this interview and they are struggling, where can they go to for help?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me give you a couple of things that are necessary, some steps that are necessary for healing. Now, let me first clarify by saying this isn't follow these 5 steps, send me $19.95 and you'll be free. You know, we have to reiterate that purity is not a destination that we reach, but it's a daily battle that we fight. Heaven is the destination that we're going to reach as Christians. Okay, so it's a daily battle. It's a daily choice to be pure. You don't wake up and go, oh my goodness, I'm pure, right? So these 5 steps are very, very crucial. I give them in all my talks. And I'll spit them out quick. And for anyone who wants more information, they can go to thepawneffect.com where they'll find a plethora of information. But the very first step is to admit that you have a problem and do something about it. I mean, healing cannot begin when we are saying, oh, look, it's the porn industry's fault. It's the culture's fault. It's my relationship with my father. That's the fault. That's the problem. It's my relationship with my wife. She's the problem. You know, we really have to get to a point where we realize, you know what, it's my problem, and I have to do something about this. This isn't the kind of man I want to be. This isn't the kind of woman I want to be. And once we've made that decision, we need to do something about it. And so, obviously, if we have pornography in the form of magazines, DVDs, videos, get rid of them. And don't just get rid of them so you can come back to them later. I'm talking smash them with a sledgehammer, set them on fire, get rid of them. You know, there's something really healing in doing that. You know, perhaps you've done this on the internet. One thing Jeff Cavins recommends is formatting your computer and then blessing it, you know. Basically, it's like taking your computer to confession, he says. You know, start with a clean slate and say, this computer will not go anywhere it should not go. I dedicate this to the Lord. You know, put up a picture of the Blessed Virgin Mary or our Lord on the computer, you know. Second, we need to become accountable. One of those beautiful gifts that we have as Catholics is the great sacrament of confession. And we need to realize that when we bring our sin to confession, the divine physician who said in Mark 2:17, look, I haven't come for the sick, the healthy, I've come for the sick, that he heals us and that he forgives us completely of our sin. You know, St. John Vianney says that the Lord longs to save you from sin more than a mother her child from a burning building. So we have a very merciful and beautiful God. You know, 1 John chapter 4, verse 8, it says, God is love. And you read what that is in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8, when it starts off by saying, look, love's patient. It's not irritable. But how many of us suffer from these thoughts that, look, God's just, he's not patient, he's very impatient with me, and he's always irritated with me. This is not from the Lord. This is from the accuser of our brethren that we read about in Revelation 12, verse 10. You know, get to confession. And then find some brothers that you can be accountable to, you know, or if in the case of a woman, find some good holy sisters, you know. And I'm not necessarily talking religious brothers or religious sisters, that might help, but just men who are walking the walk with you, you know, and just bringing it before them. You don't have to go into all the details, but say, listen, I've fallen to this sin. Pray for me, you know, and I'll pray for you. So becoming accountable. So doing something about it, becoming accountable. You know what, I'll finish with one more because there's probably a lot more to say and I don't want to take up too much of your time, Jason. People can go to thepawneffect.com to learn more. But I think what's crucial and essential, I'll just finish on this, is we need patient perseverance. You know, the wounds did not come to us overnight, and they're not going to leave overnight either. It's going to be gradual. As I said, you know, the problem isn't our sexual desire. God gave us that sexual desire. So desiring a woman sexually, that's not a sin. That means you're healthy. And if you don't have that sexual desire, you shouldn't see a priest. You should see a doctor if there's something wrong with you. But it's about the perfection of it. So we need to make manful decisions, going to confession, you know, trusting in the Lord's great mercy for us, and just being patient with ourselves. The Lord's patient with us. He does not give up on us. And I think often it's not that we grow tired of we don't think God grows tired of us. I think what usually happens is we grow tired of looking upon our own ugliness. But what we need to understand, of course, is that we have a loving Father that's madly in love with us. 1 Timothy 2:4 says he desires all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. All men. That includes you. You know, man is the universal, so it means woman as well. If you have a pulse, he loves you. He desires you to be saved. And you better believe that as much as you might want healing from this, the Lord God is committed to fighting for you. And so we can trust in that.
Matt, can I just say, I'm so glad this conversation has been recorded, because that was all just complete gold. So thank you very much for your time and taking
the time to speak
to us today. And I just love that you're taking your message through punk clubs and jazz clubs, and maybe you can take it to some heavy metal clubs next. But anyway, we really appreciate your time and everything you're doing for people out there who are struggling with this, with this real problem. Matt Fratt, thank you very much. And there he is, Matthew Fratt, the founder of thepornefect.com. Please check out our website for links we've provided to Matt's site and videos of his testimony. Thanks for listening. God bless.